Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. All right, going into hip flexors. So this is such a super common complaint, right? Tight hip flexors. What do I do for my tight hip flexors? What tool do I use to release my tight hip flexors? Which stretch do I use to release my tight hip flexors? It's all about releasing the hip flexors. So we're going to really address, one, what the hip flexors really are so you have a better understanding of it. Mm-hmm. Because I think it, with education comes understanding, right? And so being able to understand it in a very easy way is what we're going to hopefully do today, and then give you some tools and techniques of what you can do.
And I think everyone, when we start talking about hip flexor, everyone first goes to the big hip muscle, which is this iliopsoas or psoas muscle. People might recognize that, just the psoas. We need to release the psoas. So understanding where and what the psoas is and what the iliopsoas muscle is, I think, is kind of an important place to start.
Yes. So realize that when we say iliopsoas, we're actually talking about two different muscles. Mm-hmm. So there is the iliacus, which only connects from the upper leg. So think of it, it's the lesser trochanter of the upper leg, but you don't need to know that. Just think of the bone, the big femur bone in the upper leg, so that thigh area. And it's connecting into your pelvis, actually.
Yeah.
So the iliacus, it connects into the iliac crest of our pelvis. So it's just going from our pelvis to our upper leg. Now, the psoas muscle, that's the more famous one, which is going to connect all the way from that top of that femur bone to that top of that thigh bone, past the pelvis and into the low back. So that is the one that people usually complain about the most, right? Because it's actually connecting into that back area.
And that's why a lot of the times people will be going in for their tight hip flexors or be told that they have tight hip flexors, and that's causing your back pain.
Right.
Or that's why you have low back pain, because your hip flexor touches into your low back and it's tight, so it's pulling on your low back, and that's why you have back pain. And I'm guessing there's a few people out there that are like, ping, yep, somebody has told me that before. I know that I've been told that before. You have low back pain because you have tight hip flexors.
Oh, I was going to say, I've said that before.
Oh, for sure. As a PT, definitely. I've used that type of terminology before I started really looking into, okay, what's really going on here? Mm-hmm. And how can we approach this hip tightness or back tightness? Or why is that hip flexor functioning in that way? You know, we have to peel back the layers now.
Exactly. So yeah, it's like, could the hip flexor be in a... When we say tightness, we're usually thinking of a shortened position as well. Like the muscle is just resting in this contractured, shortened position, and that is why it's pulling on that low back. So if we think about it, again, if you think from the upper portion of that thigh area all the way into that low back, and if you were to take like a string between those two areas and pull it together, that would cause that lordosis type of positioning. So that's when you get that good Instagram booty pop. That low back goes into a lot of extension. It's like the top of your hip bone. So think of your hip bone coming into your thigh. So that is what it is doing when that psoas muscle is getting shortened, right? But now we have to realize that, is it really a contracture? Is it really like in a shortened position? Or is that neurologically where your body says, oh, this is safe. This is where we rest.
Yeah. And I think that's where everyone will talk about, oh, our hip flexors are tight, or our hip flexors are shortened because we're sitting all day. I think there's a component of that that could be true. That, again, like you said, our hip flexor feels most comfortable in a shortened position because that's where it is most of the day. I also think that results in our hip flexor not being strong throughout the rest of its range and not being able to coordinate that strength. And not, so I do think that, yeah, the hip flexor may feel more comfortable in a shortened position, but it also isn't strong in the lengthened position. It's not, because it has a lot of like strength stored up in it.
Exactly.
It's not functional through its whole range. So how can we start teaching the hip different things?
Exactly. And we also have to realize too, that the hip flexor does not just do hip flexion. No. It's not just pulling that lumbar spine, that low back into your thigh, right? Mm-hmm. Again, that's only where the psoas is going to connect. So the iliacus is going to connect a little bit lower than that. But besides just pulling the knee toward the chest, so that's hip flexion. Besides just being able to do hip flexion, it's also going to do hip external rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And external rotation, some ways that we can think about it, like think you're sitting and you're going to cross your legs.
Or if you're sitting in that butterfly type position,
yes.
Then your knees are kind of falling outward. Our hips, if you're paying attention, are kind of rotating outward into that external rotation.
Exactly.
And like Jen was saying, that's just a product of the hip flexor attaching a little bit more on the inside of that femur bone so that it can also rotate outward.
Mm-hmm. And it also, it kind of helps to help us sit up.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of getting that trunk flexion.
Especially if someone's sitting on our feet, because then our femur's holding steady. So then we can pull up our, like you said, pull up our trunk with our hip.
Yeah. And it also does some side bending as well.
Totally. And I think that's a product of if we're looking like, okay, what's the hip flexor moving? Is it moving the leg or is it moving the trunk?
Right.
And if we're using it to move the trunk, that's what we're going to be doing, side bending rather than external rotation of the hip.
Yeah.
So they're kind of complementary motions with each other. So now that we're kind of pointing out, okay, maybe it's not just tightness. Maybe that hip flexor also needs strengthening, also needs to learn how to coordinate that strength through the range. Like, how do we start to approach that? Because I also think we start having other issues with coordinating of all the other muscles in the area.
Oh my gosh, it's so much. And that's why we can't just say, okay, my hip flexor is tight. What is the one stretch that I do? My hip flexor is tight. What's the best tool to release it? Because although it's feeling tight, if that's where your body neurologically likes to be, that is what it knows. This is, you stand and you may be more in that lordotic position, meaning those hips are kind of dumping forward and you got that anterior pelvic tilt. If that is all the body knows, the moment you stretch it, think of like a rubber band. You're going to stretch it. What's it going to do if you let go? It's going to go right back to that position. So even if you did a lot of stretches, even if you did a lot of releasing, if you don't teach your body how to resume a new position and actually feel comfortable and safe in that new position, it's going to go right back. And so you can do all the stretching, and there's a lot of people I'm sure who do that. Like I get it released and I do a lot of stretching and it's still the same, or I'm still dumping into my low back, or I'm still feeling the same tightness and tension in the front of my hips, you know, and that's where it comes into play of like, we need more.
And that's where a lot of the times when we do the stretch, like, how do we make that feel safe? Like, and this is where I should pull the audience from all, if you've listened to our podcast before, how do we make the body feel safe? It's coordinating, letting the hip get into these more lengthened positions with our breath and our other patterning that helps our body say, okay, this is safe. We're supporting you otherwise. Mm-hmm. So that's where you're doing, yes, a functional lunge stretch, but you're really breathing, you're controlling down through your rib cage, focusing on engaging in your low abdominal area, because then that's going to work together to make that hip feel safe, lengthening or stretching that hip flexor, right? But it's done in coordination with everything else going on.
Exactly.
But even then, that's not where we end.
Right. That's not enough. So although we can make the body feel safe, like, okay, it feels better in this lengthened position. And this is also where I go back to, it's not about 3 times 30 seconds.
No.
Three times 30 seconds is really not a good judge for how you're going to feel safe within the body. It doesn't automatically, 30 seconds goes off and your brain's like, cool, I feel good in this position. Really what we like to say, one, it's dependent. Every person is different.
Mm-hmm.
It might take one person a minute to feel like their breath is actually connecting and they are feeling that down regulation and that tension release in the muscle. It might take someone 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a difference in what you're feeling. But now once we get that brain to connect and say, oh, and you feel that tension, you would feel that tension release. So if you breathe into it well enough, and you can go back to our breath podcast to really learn about this. If you get that tension release from the relaxation, from that breath work, then we can't, again, like Dom said, we can't stop there. So where do we go?
Well, then we have to learn how to, okay, from that lengthened position, how do we show the hip how to control, especially control resistance through that whole movement? Because think about it, if we're standing and we pick our leg up, we're lifting the weight of our leg.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that comes from hip flexion, right? So then how do we coordinate that when we start walking? Because we'll be doing this amazing stretch. All of a sudden, we'll get up, we'll realize we're late to pick up our kid or something, and we'll run for the door and immediately flip ourselves back into this safe position, this position that we know that is comfortable for our body. So then we need to, and we get to start working on coordination exercises where we go into, okay, what can we do with the core to make sure we're supporting through the core while we introduce some hip motion? And a lot of the times for us, that looks like laying on your back, doing low abdominal core exercises and doing little leg lifts up and down.
Yeah. I mean, and this is where it's not just about, when we talk about the core, you have to realize that when we talk about that foundational, we're going to go back to it over and over again. The core in the inner core is made up of the diaphragm, the pelvic floor, the front of the body. So more of that transverse abdominis, that low kind of wrapping corset muscle of the core, and then the back. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you have to get this inner function with the breath usually to be able to function well before we get the outer core, the rectus abdominis, that six pack muscle, the obliques, and then programming with the hip flexors. So when we can get that inner core to work, and we go over this like mad in the optimal body, like that is, you know, the core of the optimal body is, it's not about your pretty six pack muscles and how to get those stronger. It's really how to build from this foundation so that you can then start to move with the hips and have that hip flexor not doing all of the work.
Totally. And when we talk about the hip itself, okay, great. We're working on core stability and stuff. But as we said, the hip flexor does a couple different motions. And also we know that hip flexion is paired a little more with internal rotation of the hip. So what's our internal rotation look like? And this is where if we go to one of your favorites, the 90-90 hip stretch, or doing something to explore how your internal and external rotation are on your hip, just working on that alone could help you start to feel the front of that hip freeing up, just because we're working on another motion that may actually be your biggest barrier.
Oh my gosh, that's so, so important for people to realize. A lot of times I've done that where someone feels like they have super tight hip flexors. We get them to actually open up in their hip joint.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes all the pressure off of that hip flexor. Mm-hmm. What do you know?
And it helps the coordination, because when we give more space to a joint, there's more space for all of the nerves and blood flow and everything to just communicate with each other a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, when we got less space, everybody's a little less happy and they communicate a little less.
Exactly. And obviously, we just need to continue to work on strengthening the entire body, like your glutes and how those work in relation to the hamstrings, how the back of the chain. So the glutes and the hamstrings are going to work with the front of the hip flexors and the quads. Yeah. Like we have to realize, even as you go into a squat, it's not just the glutes that you're working to pull yourself down into that squat, is the front of the body. So your hip flexors also have to be strong. Mm-hmm. And so this is why we can't just say, how do I release it? If you want to get good squats, you want to get good range of motion, you want to not feel as much tension, you also get to strengthen. So, you know, there's so many different ways. Again, we go into all of this in mobility flows in the optimal body. I mean, controlling the range of motion from the muscle into the joint, so important to actually give you function. And then one last thing I know we wanted to tap on was how the diaphragm relates to this weird psoas muscle.
Well, and specifically, just like, it always sounds like cliche when it's like, oh, it's all connected. So do just the same things we say. Like, when we're coming closer to the core, the hip flexor itself is an integral part of that core. You know, we got our pelvic floor, we got all the core muscles, and the hip flexor is just that huge mobile joint that's going to start integrating with that big stable core. And when we look down to the insertion of that diaphragm, it has insertions all the way down into one of those psoas muscles through, I think one of it's called like the crux or the arm of the diaphragm that has these ligaments that kind of attach into that psoas muscle. So right there, even if we are controlling our breath while we're doing hip motions, those things are so intimately communicating right in the center of our body. And so that is enough to tell me that whenever I'm moving my hip, I also have to be paying attention to what I'm doing with my breath, my rib cage, my diaphragm.
100%. Like, they're literally, the diaphragm is originating in the psoas, portions of it.
Yeah.
So because they are so interconnected, you cannot be just paying attention to the hip flexor. And this is also why when we talk about diaphragmatic breathing, you know, getting the diaphragm to actually be able to work. So we talk about this a lot. So getting that diaphragm, the diaphragm pumps up and down in order for us to breathe, right? And we're always breathing. You're listening, you're breathing, right? Mm-hmm. But are you allowing space for that rib cage to actually be able to pump up and down? And that's where that rib cage stuff comes in, which again, we talked about this so much on the breath podcast. So going back to that, but also when we get more into this diaphragmatic breathing, what we're doing in turn is flipping the switch on the nervous system and we're getting more of a parasympathetic response, meaning we're getting that down regulation, that rest, relax, digest, and release of tension. So if I just get my diaphragm pumping and get more into that diaphragmatic breath, not only does that attach into my psoas, but I'm also down-regulating my entire system. So automatically, I'm going to feel less tension in that hip flexor as well.
Totally. You're just going to put the whole place in a safer space immediately. And then that's where, you know, I kind of think of someone like Vinny, who then you start working on different lunges while going overhead and while bending your trunk in different directions, because then you can feel that stretch that is all the way through the hip, through the rib cage, up into your diaphragm and into your chest. And you can really start to do these functional movements that show you how, oh, wow, I get a really good stretch from my thigh all the way up to my neck, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And this is why, so now let's talk about tools that you should use to release the hip flexors, right? The thing is, when we're looking at anatomy, if you look at where the psoas and the iliacus are located, they are deep, deep, deep structures. They're deep muscles.
Yeah. Well, it's not realistic to say that you're only pressing on that muscle. Yes. It's not realistic to say that you're only impacting that thing, because our femoral nerves and artery come out in that area. All of these, it's like a minefield. Like, to, if you press in on those, our lateral cutaneous nerve, like, you'll feel all these paresthesias or tinglings on your thighs, like if you hit the wrong place when you're digging into those nerves. So to say that I'm only impacting the psoas muscle, no, you're probably impacting the whole femoral nerve complex, which supplies a lot of the muscles on the whole front of the leg down through the calf and stuff. So,
and we have to get through the abs. We have our obliques, our transverse abdominal. We have so much
organs too.
We have organs in that
that
area.
Are up in that area.
It's so. it's really crazy to think that we're just going to use a tool. So what do we actually like to use?
Going back to the breath and the diaphragm, one of our favorite things is the Corgis ball.
Yes.
Which you've probably seen, or you may have seen Jen or I use, but it's just this kind of inflatable ball that you lay on and it really presses up into your abdomen. And the thought is that we're kind of, as we're breathing, becoming more aware of and influencing what we're feeling in those tissues deep in our abdomen, which, as we just talked about, includes the attachment of the diaphragm and the attachment of our ileus or our psoas muscle, the psoas portion.
And when we're doing that and we're getting that good kind of rubbing on those tissues in kind of like this digestive area, we actually help to kind of stimulate the vagus nerve as well. And when we stimulate the vagus nerve, this is another nerve that's going to help to promote that parasympathetic system to help relax, digest, and really release that tension within that psoas. So you really want to release tension. You really want a tool to do that. That's where laying and breathing on the Corgis ball 2 minutes every day, it makes one of the biggest impacts on all of my clients that I have.
Absolutely.
Thank you again for joining us on yet another PT Pearl. We just appreciate you so much. And of course, if you need more visuals for each PT Pearl, they are over at Doc Jen Fit on YouTube. There is a whole section for the PT Pearls from the Optimal Body Podcast that you can use to really see what we're talking about. And don't forget, if you really like this, if you're learning from it, share it out, share it with your community. Tell us what you're learning. Rate and subscribe to the episode, because there's going to be so many more goodies and PT Pearls along the way. And if you're ready to dive in even deeper, don't forget, we have an Optimal Body membership with an incredible community of movers learning with us and moving in their body. Until next time, Thank you again.